welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are wondering whose shirts you wear, in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, it was another fruitless trip to Old Trafford for the Albion as Man United actually decided to turn up, and quite frankly, we didn't. In fact, we were lucky to come away having just conceded the three goals. The international break has denied us the chance to get back to winning ways this weekend, but we do know that we will be without captain Lewis Dunk when we return to action next week against high-flying Leicester. This weekend does see an Albion team in action at the Amex with the women's team taking on Birmingham City. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back journalist, author, and David Bowie aficionado, Nick Szczepanik.
Good evening.
Hello, how are you, Nick?
Fine, thanks. Yeah, I was like everybody else at the moment.
Well, yeah. I was going to plug your gig at the Rialto coming up, but it's sold out.
Sold out, apparently. Yes, yes.
Oh, thanks for the tickets on that. No, never mind.
But I mean, this is a thing for Yargos, though, isn't it? We should get it out of the way now.
Get people out. I can get people in, I believe. I think there's a guest list. Yeah,
yeah. But this is your Bowie tribute night, isn't it?
And when is this?
This is, I think, it's Friday, January the 10th. So hoping that there's no rearranged FA Cup game for the Albion. Yeah. So yeah, okay. Men who fell to earth.
Oh, brilliant! I have seen you actually playing a Bowie tribute band. I think it was down at the Star of Brunswick. Big man on bass. This is a couple of years
ago. The Brunswick.
Well, yeah. Mm. Always known as the Brunswick.
Could have been.
Yeah. And I was about to say highly recommended, but it's already sold out.
No. There might be tickets available and other shows, and we will let you know when they
happen.
Absolutely. But Nick,
can I just say, this is the fellow. He's not going to admit it, but this is the fellow who's played alongside Glenn Tilbrook. Yep. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he just turned around and said...
Nice for Glenn.
Yeah, who are you?
This is a roundabout way of not talking about our trip to Manchester United last
week. Really, no.
Which,
yes, do we have to?
Unfortunately, we're going to have to, Nick. We didn't turn up, did we?
Well, I was a little bit worried not by anything that came out of the club, but a lot of the overconfidence online and saying, oh, you know, this is our best chance ever to beat Manchester United, which possibly it was.
I did add to that noise, unfortunately.
But the problem with it is, you know, that those clubs, they do have very expensive players who can all turn up at once. And I'm not sure. I don't think any of our players went with any overinflated sense of expectations. But I don't know whether you know, they sort of caught the mood, but you know, as you say, that was one of those days when they do all turn up, and they did expose that one weakness of ours, which is a lack of pace. And that's one thing I think that, you know, we haven't quite addressed fully. I don't know how fast Webster is when fully fit. I'm not sure he's been fully tested yet, but back four is a little bit on the slow side. We haven't got much. Well, you know, where is our pace in the team? Possibly Trossard, possibly that bloke Andone, who we may talk about later.
Yes. We may well do.
But it's a weakness in our squad, I think, and I think it was rather exposed.
Okay, yes. But I mean, we did go into the game. It was the first time we played United when we've been above them in the table. They've been on a terrible run of form. I mean, and you know, we've been pretty okay. And you know, some of the performances on the road may not have yielded the results which we made with Villa, for instance, but the performances have actually been okay.
For the most part, they have been okay. I mean, I made a point of missing the Chelsea game. A lot of people said that was awful, but yeah, it's one of those where we didn't turn up. I've noticed it's roughly about one game in every three that it's seriously below par, where you think, well, we actually got what we deserve, which was nothing. That's not to say that in the two games of every three we got what we deserve. Far from it. We deserve more from certain games. But this one, you can't. And I think, as you said in your intro, but for some howling misses and some, you know, and some excellent goalkeeping work, it must be said, for all the fact that I've seen a lot of criticism of Matty Ryan. I see criticism of Matty Ryan every week, it seems. And I find that totally unfair and totally unreasonable. He was left hopelessly exposed on so many occasions. And he kept the score down.
Yeah. Well, OK, well, I mean, I do want to talk about our defence, Nick, actually, because the first United goal, there was four players there in the box and no one tried to close the ball down.
No, it was a strange performance, wasn't it? I think that, you know, that people need to get out a little bit more quickly to the ball. And, you know, it hit Stevens. who was far too far away from the player when he hit it. I mean, yes, once again, it wasn't that far away from the edge of the penalty. You would expect Stevens would have been there. I think both those very below par performances, Chelsea and Manchester United, were away to top six teams, and there's obviously a little bit of a hangover still there. Mm-hmm. Well, sort of, you know, quotes top six teams, big six teams, perhaps we should play. Mm-hmm. And apart from that Arsenal game last season when we were breathing a collective sigh of relief, you know, we still have problems turning up in those games, and, you know, Liverpool away coming up. The problem is also partly that the style of play this season does require people to pass the ball well, and frankly, we couldn't pass water at Old Trafford. You know, the ball was given away and given away and given away. And it's not just the person passing the ball, it's also the person receiving the ball has to be ready to get it and, you know, not, you know, be aware of people trying to intercept. And I just think it was, a collective off day.
I mean, there wasn't many outfield players that came out with any credit. I mean, Davey Proper is probably the one exception to the rule.
But that ends up being completely irrelevant when, yeah, you can see him running around, getting the ball around, doing this, doing that. But if the rest of the team, as Nick said, it's not just the passer, it's the receiver as well. It's the person who's got to be ready to receive the ball. And this is where you've got, you see that the inexperience of Connolly. Yes, he's a good player. Yes, he can hold the ball up well. Yes, he can do this. But as you say, Potter's style is a high risk one, and it requires, and this is where I think, and I've said this before, I think the Potter can manage at a higher level on account of the fact that the way he plays or the way his style is requires, for it to work really well, for it to work properly, requires the best players. And we have Premier League players, we have loads of middle table Premier League players, and they are playing to their maximum, and it's a lot more attractive and it's a lot better than what we had last season. But it does require everyone to be on the game. Not if last season, if it was one or two off their game, they could be carried. But when you've got a person who's passing and the other one isn't receiving, and that person really will stand out, then the whole thing actually falls apart quite quickly.
But Nick, I mean, you were saying there as well that the speed of interchange just wasn't there.
No, I wonder about the wisdom of going to Old Trafford with two forwards, not having found a space for Gross or Moy. In a game like that, you know, where keeping the ball, I think, you know, was going to be very important, and possibly building up, you know, periods of possession. We didn't. It's gone. We did get back into it at 2-1, you know, and that was the time when you had to keep the ball for 5 or 10 minutes. And, of course, we know what happened. We didn't.
Actually, let's talk about Aaron Moy then, because, I mean, obviously there was a red card, which was deserved at the end of the day. I mean, it was two yellow cards.
It was his first career one, wasn't it?
But do you feel that he's a little bit unlucky not to have got back into the side? Because he was beginning to show the player we thought we'd signed.
Yes. I suppose, you know, that if you do you change a winning team? You know, okay, we'd beaten Norwich, but then, you know, it was Norwich. Mm. And, you know, they are a pretty abysmal team. But then, you know, we'd only beaten them 2-0. You know, it took us a while to break them down. They didn't get any chances to speak of. But, you know, could we have done better against Norwich? Was there a case for thinking, well, you know, OK, we won, but, you know, we should have done better. We could have done better.
It was basically the finishing that day, wasn't it? I mean, some of the finishing was, we were creating chances, I think, that day. It was just the finishing. And you know, people behind the goals were probably terrified. But getting back to your point about Aaron Moy, yes, he is a good ball carrier. Is he too similar to David Proper? Does it work as a three in the midfield of those three? Then probably away at Manchester United, that's arguably the time it will work best. So the answer is maybe. But, you know, Potter's got faith in his front players.
Yeah. But what the thing with Potter's formation, it doesn't really have an awful lot of width in it. And obviously, I mean, we're used to having wingers bombing up and down the wings, and we're kind of reliant on the fullbacks to do that.
Relying on the fullbacks when you're playing three at the back. If you're playing four at the back, you can't rely on Montoya and Byrne to be wingers as well. And that means that you do need to find the width from somewhere. I mean, there was a case for, you know, him having Alzate and Moy in those slightly advanced wide midfield positions, and, you know, or possibly going 5-4-1. I might have started that, but I'm naturally cautious. So, and you know, Graham Potter, to his credit, in certain situations, isn't. You know, he likes to have a go, which is great. Our forward players. I think that I'm concerned about Mope as in his capacity for missing. You know, while we talk about missed chances against Norwich. You know, I'm I'm not entirely convinced by Mope. But then, you know, it's Connolly, a great scorer of goals. He scored two goals in one game. I thought at the time, is he going to go on to be Peter Ward, or is he going to be Brian Wade? You know, was that his four goals against Newcastle game? No, I mean, he's a great player. He's worth his place on, you know, the trouble he causes to opposing defences and the free kicks he wins, if nothing else. But, you know, I think Mope has a lot of misses in him, really, for a supposed goal scorer. Yeah.
And some of them are glaring misses.
Particularly likes to hit the ball over the bar.
He's very good at that. Also, I noticed that, and I said this on the show last couple of weeks, is that I think that Mope and Connolly's link-up play is actually virtually non-existent. They are two separate strikers whose approach play is pretty reasonable, but together they're not Murray and Barnes. They're not Ward and Mellor.
Also, I'm a little concerned about some of the body language when one of them has a shot and doesn't pass to the other.
That's my point.
In both cases, you occasionally see a few shrugs and a few, you know, raised arms. You know, a partnership does involve sometimes one passing to the other rather than shooting and then saying, "Oh, sorry, guy, I didn't see you."
Yeah, that's the kind of the long answer of what I was kind of trying to point out there.
Words to my business, sorry.
Yeah,
I overuse them.
Then let's put it this way: they're not Ward and Mellor.
Yeah, this is true. Okay, well, we did go two goals behind, and it was a weird goal to concede. There was a lengthy VAR check for apparently Maguire handball.
Well, I thought he did, actually. I mean, I was watching on a Moody stream, but I thought there was a, you know, his arm was certainly up, probably not connecting with Dunk's head, but it was certainly up. And what did it hit if it didn't hit his arm?
Nick?
Yes, just a horrible goal. I mean, it was quite a deep free kick, and you wonder whether the keeper should have come sometimes. But no, I agree that, you know, there was a flailing arm. The trouble with VAR checks is who knows what they're looking at, who knows what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're going to touch on that in a little bit. So, yeah. But it did take a long time out of the game, though.
Well, when we got sort of extra overtime is 6 minutes, and that's about 5 minutes of which is VAR. You know, I mean, I'm just thinking ahead here to the Arsenal game that we've got. It's on the 5th of December. It's a Thursday. They've moved it. It's 8:15 kickoff. And if there's a couple of incidents involving VAR, I'm worried about people getting home again. You know, because if you've got an extra five, you know, it's collectively an extra 10 to 12 minutes of the game.
There needs to be a cut-off. I think this is the one thing you could do which wouldn't involve referees going over and looking at monitors. Somebody has got to decide, OK, the VAR check starts now, it lasts no more than a minute. If they haven't seen anything by then, OK, the ruling on the field stands.
Can we have the countdown music while that's going on? What?
Hey, brilliant idea.
Yeah. Well, the thing genius. Is, that's the point. You raise an interesting point there, is that if they're looking for one thing, like, for instance, an offside or a handball or something like that, but with the second goal, they're probably looking about three or four different things. Was anyone offside? Was there a handball? Was there a foul in there? And you think, well, you know, does that mean you're going to give 20 seconds for each consideration? Have you got more than one? It's what you're looking for. That's the ridiculous thing. Mm. And if you're looking for about three or four different things...
Okay. But I mean, we'll talk about this again in a bit. But basically, it was the goal was given. It was given as an own goal,
which is correct.
And then the dubious goals committee has come in and taken the own goal away from Davy Proper. And I'm sure he is delighted.
Well, sure he is, but he clearly kicked into that.
McTominay will get a goal bonus. Yeah. That's the only difference there. I suppose for betting purposes, it counts. But I don't know how it can not be an own goal.
Well, yeah, I mean, he clearly kicked it in. I mean, accidentally, of course, but, you know, it was only sort of, you know, 6 inches out, but he clearly kicked it in. It's, I mean, it just goes to show that there is a separate set of rules for the big six, the top six, whatever it is you want to call them. There is clearly a separate set of rules.
Okay, well, let's move it on. Half-time came and there were some changes, two changes, in fact, both of which baffled me. Glenn Murray came on for Aaron Connolly. Apparently that was because Connolly had actually picked up a knock, so I do actually understand that.
Right, so it's not going to baffle you then?
No, and Solly March came on for Montoya, who was... Well,
right, actually, I've got a bit of a down on Montoya. Am I the only one, Nick?
No. No, I think right-back's a problem position for us.
Bring back Bruno.
I think Montoya can look good going forward. I think he's suspect defensively. If you look at where he came from, he played for Spanish clubs who are used to attacking the opponents and not used to being attacked so much themselves, not used to not having a lion's share of possession. Mm. And I thought last season looked a bit of a shock to Montoya, at the amount of defending and being forced back, you know, that was happening to him. I think he looked better in with the three centre backs because he could play more like a wing back, and I think obviously that would suit Scalotto. But I think if we're going to play a flat back four, we need a better basic right back than either of those two.
Well, I'd also argue in that case, if we're going to play a flat back four, I think we need a better left back, because I'm more than happy with Dan Burn as part of a centre back three, and I think it works very well, and he does get to go forward. But I think he had his first game at left back and everyone's going, oh wow, this is great, we've got someone who can cross, great. But for me, he's actually kind of regressed a little bit, and he's sadly found out of position. And I mean, it started for me with the Newcastle game, and he was going flying into tackles, and I thought he was almost a liability. I'd be delighted. It seems to be that everything we're saying here says everyone plays better when we've got the five. If it's Duffy, Duncan, Burn as the back three, and then pick your own two wing backs, it seems to work better every time.
Okay.
But to have Burn at left back, it's not about his height.
I'm looking forward to Bernardo coming back, because frankly, I thought he was one of our best players in the last quarter of last season, and I think we've missed him.
Well, Nick, well, let's just fast forward to next week. Obviously, Dunk's picked up a booking, so he's going to be out of the Leicester game next week. Webster's injured, so what defence do you play?
You get our fastest midfield player, and you play him as a sweeper between. No, you see. Against Manchester City for Swansea last season, Graham Potter decided that he wasn't going to play a tall central defender in the middle of his back three because Manchester City weren't going to launch it in there. So he played a midfield player in the centre of his back three. Now, I think I'd like to see something radical along those lines. A pacey midfield player. Yves Bissouma?
Yeah.
Has he got, you know, is he responsible enough to play?
Sorry.
We don't want to talk about
see what you did there.
Right now.
Or something, I don't know, may take something like that, because Byrne and Duffy, Duffy and Balogun against Jamie Vardy. Interesting.
Yeah, I think we're either talking about three goals against us or a maiming. Because if you've got Vardy, who, let's face it, at times is a nasty piece of work. And then goes to scores.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing his seagull impression after his eagle impression.
Or the other answer is you cut off the supply to him. I've been clutching at straws. I remember a long, long time ago, a very injury-hit Brighton team playing against a Watford team at the Goldstein who were flying and coming out with a 1-0 win with, I think, Keith Dublin moved to centre-back from left-back and Ian Chapman coming in, a real backs-to-the-wall performance. And I think it's going to need something like that. I mean, I heaven forfend that Graham Potter should abandon, you know, the sort of bringing the ball out of defence style. But I don't know if we can afford to play so in such an open manner against a Leicester team that's full of confidence and full of pace.
Is someone like Hayden Roberts ready?
That would be a very difficult thing to throw someone like that in.
He's not even 17 yet, is he?
He's one of the youngest players
He's already playing for England. So
you're a slightly different playing for England kids compared to playing at Premier League. You really are talking about an almighty gap.
If we've learned anything,
here.
We've learned that Graham Potter is not afraid to
well, there is
the reason I'm saying that is because we are kind of like, because of the injuries and suspensions, we are short on numbers. So,
well,
so
I suppose what's the point of having Balogun if we're not going to play him when we need a central defender? And, you know, he may not be the slowest player we've got.
Yeah, I like Balogun.
There is three defenders we can play. It's just there are no spare centre-backs.
Maybe Hayden Roberts may come in on the bench.
Well, I think there's people ahead of him in the queue. But, yeah, I get your point. But I would imagine that it will be probably the first choice of Burn and...
Well, Gayton can play as a centre-back as well.
I would imagine, I'm guessing here, it's going to be a first choice of Burn and Dunk as the two centre-backs.
Not Dunk.
Duffy, same person. Burn and Duffy in the
version.
Okay, well, let's talk about Lewis Dunk. And he did actually score his first goal of the season at Old Trafford. So,
well,
I mean,
United are weak at those set pieces, weren't they? I mean, there was a couple of times, you know, Duffy had a chance. He flailed his leg at it, but there was, no one following him. They've got,
they've got England's Harry Maguire in there as well, who's supposed to be this fantastic centre-back. I mean, once again, we were very close to that. I think there was actually a slight glance off Dunk that took it away from Duffy, wasn't there?
Yeah, something like that.
That Trossard free kick, so unlucky. Great header from Lewis Dunk for the goal.
Totally unmarked. 6 yards out.
He made the run. It was a good delivery. Yeah. But yeah,
normally they end up.
We look for more of those in the future.
Absolutely.
Do you think if we obviously they did restore their 2-goal advantage 2 minutes later? Do you think if we'd have held on, we could have actually made the Old Trafford faithful
nervous?
Not
with the way we were playing.
Rather untypical. Performance by Duffy on that one, pulling his head out of the way of a shot. I mean, normally Duncan Duffy is sticking every part of their body in the way of shots, or they were last season. I mean, but,
well, this is the point I was going to make, that I was going to say about Stevens with the deflected shot. He's saying he was too far away. Dunk or and or Duffy would have been too far away, but at the very least they'd have done was launch themselves at the shot in question, whereas Stevens just stood there, and that's the slightly concerning thing.
Early in the game, before, you know, that sort of resolve has built up. I mean, towards the end of last season, you know, things like Tottenham, you know, they were getting to, you know, to the Alamo mentality, which gets stronger and stronger as games go on. But
it was a great goal from Rashford for their third, and a even better miss.
I was just waiting for the net to bulge, and I'm thinking we are in for a cricket score here, aren't we?
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move it on from there. And
it
was the worst performance of the season for me.
Chelsea?
Well, I was sat next to Nick at Chelsea. I didn't think it was actually that bad. I thought we stayed in the game quite well.
We stayed in the game, yeah, but we didn't really cause any damage at all. There was that burn header that hit the floor and then bounced up onto the bar, but until then we hadn't done anything going forward at all.
No, but it was worse than that, wasn't it?
Yes, it was worse than that.
Bearing in mind we only lost 3-1 to Man U, I suppose that for a worse performance of the season and get away with just a result like that, but I think it's just the all-round play has to improve. The point that you're making here is that we're losing one. I know we've lost Webster, but you lose one player and everyone's sort of now panicking, then, you know, Potter will have it in hand.
Okay.
I hope.
Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are delighted to be brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, and I have another one of Phil Shelley's brilliant shirts of the week from aforementioned oldfootballshirts.com.
Okay. Nick, do you want to have a go at describing that?
There's a sort of basic yellow, but with a sort of strange sunburst pattern, and there's some green trimming there with a number 9 in the middle. And
looks very Brazil national shirt, doesn't
badge,
it?
Yeah, the badge says either FERWAFA or FERWAFA, so something Football Association.
Is this one of his conifer countries? Now you've got FIFA, and then you've got all these various countries that are in dispute with their masters.
It is a
conifer shirt. It's just when you say blah 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 FA. What the letters again?
FERWAFA.
FERWA.
Western Australian.
The Federal Eagles of Royal West.
Don't forget that Yorkshire are a conifer team.
Well, yeah.
Greenland, Nepal.
Well, it's not even those countries. It's countries like, for instance, South Ossetia that are actually in dispute with their own...
Nepal are a conifer team.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay. So who's this one then?
This is the 2015 to 2016 home shirt of the Rwandan national side.
Are they members of FIFA?
Conifer.
Oh.
They may have worn it in the Cup of Nations that year. However, they were disqualified for fielding a player who had two identities and played under a Congolese passport for his club football. The team goes by the nickname of the Amavubi, which translates as the Wasp. Their home ground is the 30,000 capacity Amahoro Stadium in the Gazapo district of the capital city of Kigali. The stadium is shared with two Rwandan Football League sides, Amare Patriotique and Rayon Sports. The shirt is manufactured by an Australian company called AMS, who was set up in 2014 with a mission to support football in Africa by providing cost-effective football kits to the enthusiastic but underfunded clubs and countries across the continent.
Isn't that what Renf does?
It does. Kits are generally made locally, supporting local businesses with designs reflecting the cultural and historical themes, thus the sun and things. Rwanda, they don't have the greatest history as an international force, although this year they have dispatched the Seychelles 7-0 and 3-0 over two matches in the Cup of Nations qualifiers. Most of the current squad play their club football in Rwanda. There aren't many links to the UK, but Alfred Mugabo, he's plied his trade in the Isthmian Leagues with the likes of the Met Police, Dulwich Hamwich and Braintree. And striker Jesse Reindorf spent time with Bury in 2014, followed by stints at Tamworth and Sutton. I think the most astonishing stat I have found is their former manager, and a German, called Rudi Gutendorf, and he holds the record for managing more national teams than anyone else.
Go on, and are they all African?
No, I've got the list of them here.
Oh, God.
It's a lot of them. So
No. How many?
I haven't counted them, actually, but really, you're going to count them.
Go on, then.
Bermuda, Chile, Bolivia, Venezuela, Grenada, Antigua and Barbuda, Botswana, Australia, New Caledonia, Nepal, Tonga, Tanzania, Fiji, Sao Tome and Principe, Ghana, China, Iran, China again, Mauritius, Zimbabwe, Samoa and Rwanda.
This is the Sam Allardyce.
Western Samoa or American Samoa?
Yeah.
Obviously got to him as he passed away in September at the age of 93.
Wow.
That's a lot of teams.
That's a lot of teams. Well, that's more than Sam Allardyce. That's more than,
Harry Redknapp.
More than Jack Nicklaus. Yeah.
Well, that is a lot of clubs. But that was national teams. So
national teams.
It's going to fall out of you again now.
No, go on. Okay, so for those of you who's listened to this show for years and years and years, you know what Hinge and Bracket, me and AD are. So I think it's about time we had someone who's far more diplomatic, maybe to keep us apart. With that in mind, and bearing in mind that as a Premier League club, we are truly international, we're delighted to say that on the line now we've got a New Zealand-based Albion fan, Ruben Levermore. Ruben, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great, thanks, Al. Really good to join you and AD on the show.
Great stuff. Now, the reason I mention diplomacy here is that you have a kind of your career, your CV reads something a little bit more highbrow than the rest of us might be used to. Do you want to fill us in on this?
Well, look, I think if I'm not mistaken, Al, we might have crossed paths online when I was working as a New Zealand ambassador in Thailand about 4 years ago, and you'd spotted that I was liking the tweets, the Albion Raw tweets, as I was following the Albion online. But yes, I joined the New Zealand Foreign Ministry out of university, which is, now about 20 years ago. And I had a posting as the New Zealand ambassador to the Philippines and then to Thailand until about 3 years ago.
The story was, we sent out a thing, where do you listen? And you came back and you said, hi, I'm the New Zealand ambassador for the Philippines. Whoa. And it's kind of like our heads kind of exploded a little bit.
Yeah, it's a bit highbrow for us, Ruben. I mean, you know, can't you just say that you're, I was about to say a politician, but we're in Purda, so let's give that one a swerve. Ruben, delighted to have you on the Albion Raw, but you're based in New Zealand, so what's your Albion connection?
Yeah, that's right. Look, I'm a New Zealander born and bred, but my father, Vern, grew up in Hove and immigrated to New Zealand in the 1970s. I think he was at the record attendance for an Albion match, which was against Fulham in 1958. There you go.
Okay.
And so my first Albion memory was, funnily enough, the 1983 FA Cup final. I was 7 years old at the time. Back then, it was the only match you could watch live on television in New Zealand was the FA Cup final in the middle of the night, our time. So I remember as a young boy getting up and watching that match, and I remember it really clearly, and in particular, you know, that last moment, Smith must score. So from there, I guess, well, it went downhill for a while, didn't it?
But
these days, it's just fantastic. It's been a long wait.
So give us a flavour. I mean, you're talking about you as a seven-year-old watching the game, so that would have been at stupid o'clock in the morning. So give us a flavour of what it's like to be an Albion fan so far away.
That's the thing, isn't it? And not just that, I guess, an Albion fan that didn't grow up in Brighton, you know, I guess a first-generation New Zealander who supports the Albion passionately. But, you know, for so many of those years through the 80s and 90s, it was so hard to get information, and technology has changed so much. I know you've talked about that before on the show. But, you know, as an example, I remember in 1991, when the Albion made the playoff final, and I had to wait till the Monday to get the newspaper from the corner shop to find out the score against Notts County, and unfortunately, you know, we lost. But things changed really in the late 90s with the internet, and that's just transformed everything, you know. And I think that you're seeing the opportunity for Albion fans to connect with Albion and with each other all around the world, which is just great. So for my dad, who's now in his mid-70s, and he has Parkinson's, so he can't get out of the house much, for him to be able to tune in by television each week and watch the Albion live is just absolutely fantastic. We have that in common, and it's a real joy, really.
Sure.
Yeah, because every game is shown live over there. Is it on Optus Sports? Optus Sports?
Yeah, it's sort of changed around over the years. It was in New Zealand, it was BN Sports last year. Now one of our local telco providers, Spark, has the rights. So, you know, you can download the matches online, which is good. I can carry my phone around. I can watch the Albion anywhere. I don't have to be in front of a television. So that's really good. And I'll typically, if I don't watch live, I can get up on a Sunday morning and watch the match without knowing the result. So that's fantastic, you know, as I did last week with the Manchester United match. But with Albion in the Premier League now, it changes everything. So long may it last.
Do you find you've become, because you've been able to watch more games, that you've become more passionate?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I think it's a combination of a couple of things. I think it's perhaps the distance and the difficulty for so many years and being able to get that information. Probably the fact that Albion struggled for such a long time, you know, as you guys have talked about on the show many times in the past, supporting an underdog, and especially from a long way away, it means that when the good times come, they mean so much more, you know. And I think it's very rare for me to find other New Zealanders that know much about the Albion. That is starting to change. Of course, there are a number of British expats that live in Australia and New Zealand, and there's some fan groups on Facebook, for example. Steve Longley has been behind the Seagulls Down Under. So it does provide a bit of connection. I think the time difference means it can be hard for us in New Zealand to get together to watch a match. In Australia, it's not quite the same, but often the matches are really literally in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I mean, Richie, the former host of this show, was—he's actually in New Zealand as well. So
he's actually in Auckland. So yeah. when you're talking about, I mean, what you've actually done is actually preempted my next question. So when you're talking about sort of being in Australia or New Zealand and the number of people that there are over there who've probably there's a lot more of the awareness of the club now that we're in the Premier League. Has that made the massive difference, or was it, you know, is still sort of a relatively anonymous thing over there?
Well, I wouldn't say a massive difference yet, but I do notice that, you know, friends or colleagues that I have that follow the English Premier League, they're now much more aware of Brighton as a side. I mean, they'll be more aware when we qualify for Europe at the end of the season, of course. But but you know. But what happened when I was growing up in the 80s, the team was Liverpool. And so I think for a lot of those fans that are far away, that are growing up, that play football as I did as a young child, Liverpool was the team. So many in my generation will be Liverpool supporters. Or if they lived in London, maybe they might be Arsenal or Spurs or what have you. So those are the clubs, as you probably find anywhere in the world, that are popular. It's less common to find fans of a team like Brighton. But, you know, hopefully that changes into the future.
So have the club never asked you for an ambassadorial role as their representative in New Zealand?
Well, I haven't thought of that, actually, Al. I mean, who knows? Maybe that call will come. But the other thing is, I've had a chance to go and watch the Albion. And, I mean, those are the sort of special memories for me, I guess, when you've been on the other side of the world. The first chance was I got to the Wythdene in 2002. That was early in my diplomatic career, and I was posted to Brussels for 3 years.
All right.
So I made it an early priority to get over to London and take the train down to Brighton. And it was a 2-2 against Notts County. I got to see Bobby Zamora play back in the League One days.
That's when he cracked his shoulder, wasn't it?
It was, exactly. Yeah, it was just near him when he came off. Mm. And, Notts County made a comeback. And there was another match against a couple of years later against Millwall in the driving rain. I think it was a late 1-0 win at home. But the experience of sitting in the uncovered stand with the rain coming down in February and getting back on the train to London, you know, hiding my Albion shirt underneath my my coat, you know, that was such a difference to be able to come back about 15 years later and actually go to the Amex and see that pre-season match against Atletico in Madrid the week before Albion kicked off in the Premier League in 2017. And I think just to see the change in the club and the quality of the facilities is just remarkable, really. And I think from being so far away, you take a gap like that of 13 years, and it might seem like a long time, but it's a radical transformation. It's just such a credit to everyone in the club,
absolutely.
I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sorry, what do you mean hiding your coat? Sorry, I mean, this, even though we were playing it with Dean, surely you were with pride. And you know, you go around the New Zealand consulate and say, look, Brighton Hove Albion, mate, you know, whatever. I'm not going to do a New Zealand accent, but, you know, you go around the consulate and say, look, Brighton, you all right? Don't hide it.
Well, the only thing, Al, is, you know, maybe growing up in New Zealand, it sort of takes a little bit of time to get the cultural cues, you know what I mean? And I'm going back to London on the train, and let's just say that they weren't Brighton fans in the same carriage after having played Millwall. So, you know, certainly no problems, but certainly the reputation of the Millwall fans preceded them. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely.
So Ruben, with the globalisation of the game now, you must be hoping that the Albion come to your neck of the woods for a pre-season tour.
Well, that would be great, wouldn't it? I mean, I remember as a kid, I remember, you know, some of the first division sides, I think Watford, maybe even Spurs, came out here for pre-season tours. I guess these days, you know, the big clubs tend to go to Asia. I mean, New Zealand's a long way away. I don't think we've had we had West Ham come out here a few years ago. Winston Reid, who's a Kiwi, was playing for West Ham at the time, so that gets a bit of following, as does Chris Wood, of course, at Burnley. Yeah, look, very welcome. Happy to act as a liaison officer. Let's get back to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Ruben, looking forward, mate, when do you think you're next going to be back? And if so, you know, do pop by the studio. So when's your next journey back to London?
Well, I haven't planned one, but, I mean, I love getting back to London. I love getting back to Europe. Obviously, the summer months coincide with our winter, but, I mean, the last time I was back, unfortunately, it was before really pre-season was getting underway. So it would be great to be able to come back during the season and either, you know, get to a Brighton match either at the Amex or away. That would be fantastic.
Absolutely. Listen, it'd be great to have you over. Ruben, it's been a pleasure for you to come on the show. Please, when you're next over, do look us up. Come and join us in the studio. And do make sure, please, you spread the word. Not so much for the Albion, but for the Albion Raw, because we are, you know, we'd like to spread our wings a little bit, you know.
We need show ambassadors, and you're an ambassador.
Absolutely.
So there we go.
Radio Reverb is global, unlike global. So, Ruben, thanks very much indeed.
Well, look, thanks very much, guys. I mean, it's a slow revolution here, but it is happening. I mean, I've converted one of my best mates to Brighton over the last 10 or 15 years. So we actually talk a lot on the phone, Dave Harrison in Christchurch. But, look, I just wanted to say thank you so much for what you do with The Roar. It's a fantastic show. You know, it helps those of us who are a long way away to feel connected. Some great interviews. The Tony Bloom one was fantastic the other week. But listen week in, week out. So keep up the great work. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. It's an ambassador's reception.
Is that what you wanted to say?
No.
Oh,
okay. And while we're at it, it's wonderful we've got so many people. I mean, we've got two in New Zealand that have come back to us on this one.
Just
we've got
two.
New guy who's come back to us again, Lewis. He's in Lewisville in Colorado. Someone in Song Hangleton. That's miles away.
Well,
Ruben
Neville,
Auckland, New Zealand, LA, Toronto.
Hang on. Are we talking about Karen in LA? Because that LA is slightly different.
Well, Littlehampton, yeah.
That's
I know.
The one, yeah.
Cedric Stone in Toronto, who won one of our competitions recently. England lost. No, we've spoken to him before. He likes to listen in his car driving to and from work in the real LA. And we've got greetings from the north. Well, Horsham, which is Nick Simmons. We've got Kieran in Worthing. We've got Philip Andrew in Pontefract. Hello. Ralph Savage in Denmark. Hello to you, Ralph. John Hewitt in a very wet Cornwall. It's wet everywhere at the moment. Little Mick in Glasgow. David Blanchard's North Devon, although he's born in Brighton, he says. Luke Firth in Luxembourg. How the hell did you end up in Luxembourg?
Well, they have Radio Luxembourg. I'm sure, you know, you can...
That was on a boat in the middle of this channel.
No, Radio Luxembourg was based in London, wasn't it? It wasn't a pirate ship radio.
It's a long time ago.
It is a long time ago.
General Patton's buried in Luxembourg. Yeah.
We've got Martin Hove Albany. He's in New Jersey. Spike Reynolds in Perth, Australia. Hello to you. Good morning. Nigel Leaney in Cambridge. We've got another one in Auckland. James Brown. Hello. Ben Boiling in Norway. Alistair Long in Linz in Austria.
Are you going for all our listeners?
No, not all of them.
Okay.
That would take a very, very long time, Alan.
And anyone else who knows me.
Yeah.
There you go.
So thanks to everyone. Keep them coming.
It's great to know
we've
got people across the world. I take Ruben's point, and we've heard this from other people before, that we're especially those who are expats. But then, you know, as Ruben said, he's not an expat. He's all right, his dad's an expat, but it keeps linked in. You've got the commentary. They get to see the games now and again. Obviously, he'll wait until he wakes up again. But you know, I'm really pleased that we can provide a service for those people who are away from the club and just sort of have a natter about the things that we're seeing at the stadium. You know, fortnight in, fortnight out.
Yeah, well, it does appear that we don't play anymore. That's the one thing about being in the Championship. We used to play every twice a week.
Well, yeah, quite.
But no desire to go back, thanks very much.
Not
okay,
yet.
Well, just before we move, I just want to quickly talk about, I mean, obviously England played this week and we played very, very well, demolished the side, but defensively looking a little bit suspect. Now,
go on. Have your sulk. Go on.
Well, I'm not sulking about it. I mean, obviously, we look at this with blue and white striped spectacles, and we're thinking, what's Lewis Dunk got to do to get into the England side? Particularly as you know, we're not even being properly tested by some of these sides we're playing. But the chances that were given last night, recorded on Friday, they could have quite easily come away with a few goals last night. So, I mean, Nick, I mean,
you know, there was that 5-3 at St Mary's where you thought, well, something's got to be done about the defence. And Southgate came in saying that people would be, you know, selected based on their club form. And Lewis Dunk's club form until the Manchester United game, you know, was fantastic. You thought, well, you know, as you say, what else have you got to do? Is he too old? Is there some sort of arbitrary cut-off date at the age of 26 or 25? I mean, is that what's happening there? You know, there are people whose club form has been, frankly, average, and yet it seems that they get in. I mean, Tyrone Mings. Well, where are Aston Villa in the table? What's their clean sheets record compared to ours?
Well, also we have a couple of seasons ago we had Tomori on loan, and somehow he's managed to jump the queue.
I've actually reported a few Chelsea games this season, and the Watford game was all right, but I reported their game against Sheffield United, and He went missing for one of their goals. I mean, he's been okay. He's not been in Dunk's class. But the thing is, what are they doing? Are they thinking, oh, well, you know, he's one for the future? But, you know, these are matches
still one for the present, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, how far in the future are you looking? You know, I thought we had a plan to win the World Cup in 2022. I mean, that's not that far away.
By which time Dunk will only be 30, and I think it's still perfectly okay to play.
But we're in a tournament year, so you know you want to get these players into the team and playing. So
well, I think, that, Nick, I think you... sorry, I have to say in that case, therein lies the choice. It sounds like Southgate already has his squad. I mean, it's clearly not based on club form, because if it was, then you know there would be other players, not necessarily Dunk, but there would be others who would be in there. But I think he's trying to zero in on the tournament such as it is. I mean, let's face it, we're going to go.
He obviously has much more faith in John Stones than I and a lot of other journalists.
He can't get into his club side. So,
John Stones is one of those guys who certain types of fans love because he's, you know, quotes, comfortable on the ball. Much better player with the ball than without the ball. You know, I'm not sure he likes defending. that, after all, is the first job of a back four player, is to keep the ball out of his own net.
So
I don't think
he's playing against us for Barnsley.
I don't think he's great at heading the ball under pressure, you know, which is one of Dunk's strengths, which it perhaps never used to be, but it certainly is. You know, I think he's learned a lot from Duffy in that way. I just think John Stones is always a mistake waiting to happen. I remember seeing him play for Everton at Southampton and just thinking, blimey, this guy isn't going to keep his place in that Everton defence. You know, he's got to learn to defend better than that. And yet, look, you know, Manchester City bought him. But, you know, that's once again a team that's got a lot of the ball, has a lot of possession, isn't under a lot of pressure itself. So there will come a time, you know, okay, I can imagine that Stones will look great against, you know, in early rounds of tournaments. But when you come up against the serious players, you know, and you have to defend suddenly and you're not walking all over poor teams, that's when you learn, you know, what you've got.
Now, Nick, obviously we're biased. But what do your colleagues in the press rooms up and down the country think?
You know, I just look at some of the tweets, and John Cross of the Mirror is saying, you know, what has Lewis Dunk got to do to get into squads? You know, but then, you know, when Harry Kane had finally climbed out of Dunk's pocket, didn't he have a word with, you know, with Southgate and say, you know, I had it quite difficult against Lewis Dunk the other day. You know, possibly he's worth it. Or perhaps he just didn't want to embarrass himself in front of his England manager and say, you know, I couldn't get a kick against Dunk. You know, perhaps we should play him. Perhaps he just didn't want to bring the subject up. Painful.
But he has been in squads. He has got a cap. And perhaps they saw something they didn't like in him while he was away with them. I don't know.
It's not that obvious. I know it was only against the USA, but...
But he was in the squad. He was on the bench for the Spain game as well.
So. Yeah, he was. He was in the squad, but he never got on. No, I don't think he was ever going to. So he played against the USA, and I think that's kind of almost like his sop, is to say, well, okay, I've done. It's almost like Southgate's attitude is, right, I've ticked that box, move on.
I think Southgate likes a certain type of player. Whether they are the right type of player for the later stages of tournaments, I don't know. I mean, people say, oh, you know, got to the World Cup semi-final, but you know, we got to the World Cup semi-final because teams who would have stopped us getting there had been knocked out by other teams. You know, what did we actually beat? We beat some poor teams. We drew with a fairly decent team of about our level and beat them on penalties. We lost to all the better teams than us. And, you know, I don't think actually that a tournament full of slightly freak results should be allowed to sort of disguise faults in Southgate as a tactician. I mean, he very rarely makes substitutions that are game changers. They're usually like for like. I'm you know, nice guy, Gareth Southgate. Great services to men's fashion, but and beards. But yet to be convinced of him as an England manager.
Okay. Well, let's take that one stage further on. assuming. I mean, it is a big assumption. I mean, whatever his contract is that he decides that he's not going to take his team to Qatar. Is there kind of a rumblings amongst the scribes that says actually someone else should do it?
No, I don't think so. No, I think he's brilliant with the press, you know, and I think a lot of people like him. I think I'm very much in a minority. I think he's convinced a lot of people. I think that's for other than football reasons. Or, you know, on the pitch football reasons. I think there was it's interesting, actually, the rumblings about his disciplining of Raheem Sterling this week. I think possibly, you know, although I say that I'm in a minority, I wonder if that sort of brought a few things to the surface, you know, that it didn't take much for people to start criticising him. And
Well, you see, from my point of view, from the outside looking in, I mean, I'm not in a football dressing room week in, week out. So, I mean, Raheem said he was the aggressor and the thing, I was wrong, and he's taken his punishment. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But everyone's like, yeah, this sort of thing happens week in, week out in dressing rooms, and nothing ever comes of it.
Well,
managers have different approaches. But interestingly, I was speaking to Mickey Adams for my website interview next week, and he was talking about when he had the incident with Dennis Wise at Leicester, you know, when he broke Callum Davison's jaw, and Mickey felt that he dealt with the situation in house, you know, and kept it that way, but the club wanted Dennis Wise sacked. So managers, I think, you know, see things, you know, in different ways, you know, and I think they like to, you know, some people like to, you know, show themselves to be disciplinarians. Others like to sort of keep things under wraps. So, you know, there's two very different managerial approaches.
Do you think, though, Nick, that obviously we're currently living under the microscope where everything is with social media, and there were leaks coming out of that dressing room. I mean, the Dennis Wise incident, the internet probably didn't even exist properly then. But
I think there's a rush to react quickly. I think that the trouble with social media is it provokes people into reacting perhaps precipitously, and that if they'd waited, you know, for Gomez to say, yeah, no, look, you know, it's all over, I've accepted his apology, he should play, and, you know, if there'd been perhaps a little bit of breathing space and that, you know, there hadn't been this sort of pressure to react instantaneously, that perhaps Raheem Sterling wouldn't have been sort of banned.
And let's not beat about the bush. This is England's best player at the moment.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I think Southgate has to be commended for is his ambassadorial role, because he's had to put up with things other than stuff, well, stuff on the pitch, where he's had to make a stand, which I don't think any other England manager, and very, very few managers have had to do, against the racist nonsense that's purveying across sort of various parts of Europe. And certainly we have the issue in this country, but that's not the point. The issue is that on the international scale, on the international fields, it's happening, and he has had to deal with it. He's had to take a lead in that, and that's actually quite probably a scary place to go when you're setting a precedent.
Well, this goes back to what I was saying about all the non-football things. He's been faultless in that role. He's been very good in opening the players up to the media and allowing them to talk and allowing them to express themselves. And possibly these are two sides of a manager's job, or is one of the is the ambassadorial thing something for
but
more of a director
something
of football
where
in a football club?
But that's where the FA aren't leading, isn't it? He's gone out on a limb, possibly even against the FA themselves,
and they're having
to follow.
He's shown great leadership in all those areas. I just wish he was a slightly better tactician.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, there's a lot of talk of with ambassadorial roles and not burning your bridges and stuff. And one person who maybe did burn his bridges is a player who's finding himself coming back to the club, and that is Florin Andoni.
Well, did he burn his bridges? I think it's a few clubs got fed up. A few fans got fed up with the way he. Well,
oh, no,
do you put the two together? He did actually sort of, you know, he tried to maim the Southampton defender, and then you know the club said, well. You know, clear off to Turkey. If, you know, well, it probably doesn't work that way, but you know,
well, he basically said, "I never want to go back to Brighton." And,
did he say that?
Yeah, and the manager. There was an interview with Andy Naylor. It was quite vociferous in his view.
Mm. So we've got him back, and we have to fix him.
In his opinion, he was never coming back. I mean, and it's a terrible injury for him to have. But Nick, I mean, is that dangerous? Him coming back into the dressing room.
Well, I think he won't be in the dressing room for quite a long time. I think someone with those injuries will be doing an awful lot of rehabilitation work on their own. And that could be quite a good thing. I mean, I think if he decides that he wants to try again, then he's going to have to issue some apologies to various people at the club. Obviously, Graham Potter to start with, and presumably Dan Ashworth would be conducting those negotiations. And... players do come back. You know, there's players you never thought you'd see playing for certain clubs or in certain teams again who do end up playing for them again. I mean, Ezequiel Scalotto. Mm. Did we ever expect to see him in a Brighton shirt again? I don't think we did.
No, and I'm delighted he is.
Yeah, absolutely. But you see, Scalotto and Andoni, the common factor is they both have that pace that we don't have in many other players. And if we could utilise what Andoni has got... you know, and if he's prepared to take, you know, the role of a squad player and be used, you know, impact substitute or, you know, to stretch games in certain situations.
And not trying to kill the opposition.
Well, yeah, that is an inconvenience. But, yeah. I mean, and we've said, you know, after the West Brom game, you know, he's once again a red card waiting to happen.
Well, yeah.
But if that can be, you know, if that can be got out of him, it's part of his temperament, I would suggest, so possibly not. But, you know, he is an asset. That obviously Galatasaray wanted.
Yes.
You know, so there's
and
obviously...
And he's done okay there.
Done okay, yeah. So, you know, he's a playing asset of ours. And, you know, it's just up to the club to decide how best to use that asset, whether it's by selling him or playing him.
I mean, who remembers when Gus Poyet told us all that Inigo Calderon was never going to play for us again? Whatever happened there?
I should point out, actually, that the club has not come out and said that he is actually coming back to the club. I'm just talking about the normal protocol is that when a player who's out on loan gets injured, they come back to their parent club for the treatment.
Do you know that's happened?
Well, that is what happened, Nick. I mean, you know.
That's as usual. I mean, that's the thing. I'm trying to think of examples of people who haven't gone back to their parent clubs because they're in the end, those are the people responsible. It all depends what the terms of the loan agreement are.
I mean, we use Charlotte as an example earlier in this conversation, but basically he was out on loan with the Flying Donkeys, and that is Chievo's nickname. He came back for his rehabilitation at the club. So.
Okay.
But he also walked into a situation where there was a manager who was planning to play a formation that suited him, which is a different thing. So he became a more of a potential asset in a Graham Potter team than he would have been, I think, in a Chris Hughton team. Whereas it was Potter who, under Potter, that he was sent out on loan. So that's a slightly different situation. But never say never in football.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we're running out of time. So just quickly before we do finish today, we do need to talk about, there was a committee meeting up in London this week where the chairman of...
It's just when you say committee, mate, you know nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. They all convened up, I believe it was up at Stockley Park with Mike Riley.
Was it Stockley Park or were they going to a Gloucester place?
It could have been somewhere. It was London. That's all I know. But,
okay.
But it was with Mike Riley, and they're going to talk about how they feel VAR's been getting on, what changes they can make.
Who was it? He said he's happy with it. It wasn't Mike Riley. It was whoever the fellow is. He said he's happy with it 7 out of 10. So far, we've got a 30% dissatisfaction rate by your own reckoning, and you're delighted with it.
I think the Watford Chelsea game, you know, when there was that penalty that was given after a long VAR inspection of the Jorginho trip on Deulofeu. And Frank Lampard spoke to us for the Monday papers and pointed out that they'd had a meeting with all the Premier League managers and the VAR people. And they had been told that unless it was a very, very obvious error, they were not going to overturn referees' decisions. And he said, and, you know, there you go. First weekend of it, we've just had that. You know, not a very obvious penalty. Long time looking at it, and it's been... So we were told one thing on Wednesday, and here we are on Saturday, and, you know, nothing has happened. So, you know, you'd pardon my cynicism if I don't think anything will come of this meeting at all.
No, quite. I mean, it's determining what the notion of clear and obvious is. It's not to correct an error. It's not to correct... Or to try and make 100% certainty of something. Well, is it the cricket?
Or if it is, then let's have that out and let's have that said. Because we were told it's clear and obvious errors. And then, you know, you have people nitpicking over centimetres or
the Sheffield United goal at the weekend. That was the straw that broke the camel's back, because that was just utterly ridiculous.
Go back to the point I made earlier. If you know, there's got to be a point at which the VAR consultancy begins and ends, and if it's not decided in that time, then that's it. Okay, ruling on the field stands.
I mean, the law actually says about a player being level. If with VAR, there is no such thing as level. Because
you've also got to get the precise second at which the ball was kicked. Now, and that assumes that there is a precise nanosecond at which the ball leaves the player's foot, and that it's not a sort of complex double kick, or it's, you know, it comes off two parts of his foot simultaneously. I mean,
sometimes the frame rate isn't actually enough.
Yeah.
You know, the technology isn't actually there in many cases. Okay. In which case, you know, just leave it with cricket. Like, umpires call and then go with it.
Yeah, I'm with Nick. I think we need a countdown clock. So, boom. That's been this week's Albion Raw. Thanks very much for listening. Thank you to Nick Schapanik. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. Thank you to Reuben Levermore, all the way in New Zealand. This has been the Albion Raw. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. We see you then. Bye.
You've painted up your lips and rolled and curled your tinted hair. Ruby, are you contemplating going out somewhere? The shadow on the wall tells me the sun is going down. Take your love to town. It wasn't me that started that old crazy Asian war, but I was proud to go and do my patriotic chore. And yes, it's true that I'm not the man I used to be. It's hard to love a man whose legs are bent and paralyzed. And the wants and the needs of a woman your age, Ruby, I realize. But it won't be long, I've heard them say, until I'm not around.
leaving now, 'cause I just heard the slamming of the door. The way I know, I've heard it slam 100 times before. And if I could move, I'd get my gun and put her in the ground. Don't take your love to town.